Hey guys, this is Joe. Today I want to introduce you to our partner Vanta. Achieving ISO 27001 or SOC 2 compliance can unlock major growth for your company and build customer trust, but the process can be time intense and costly. Vanta automates compliance, getting you audit ready quickly and saving up to 85% of associated costs. And Vanta scales with your business, helping you enter new markets. Join 7,000 global companies like Atlassian, Flow Health, and Quora that trust Vanta. Claim 20% off Vanta at Vanta.com/startup radio. That's Vanta.com, spelled Vanta.com/startup radio.
When you're an entrepreneur with a great idea, it can be daunting to find funding. Startup Raven takes the process out of your hands by helping entrepreneurs connect and learn about potential investors all in one place, without any long-filled forms or 1,000 questions. Sign up for early access at startupraven.com.
Welcome to startuprad.io, your podcast and YouTube blog covering the German startup scene with news, interviews, and live events.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Joe from StartupRadio.io, your startup podcast, YouTube blog, newsletter, and internet radio station on tech entrepreneurship, covering mostly the GSA market, except for our internet radio station, where we have everything for tech entrepreneurship. Today, we do the recording first time that we know we cracked Chartable's Global Top 100 Technology Podcast. Thank you to all of our listeners who made this possible. Since a lot of listeners have started listening to StartupRate.io since last year, September, I want to introduce our guest again. But first, welcome in. Hey, Kimmo, how are you doing?
Very good, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing great, thank you. You have been a guest in the past. We published the interview end of September 2022. And that was the first episode. And as people can deduce, this is the second episode of our series, Central Bank Digital Currency, CBDC, Opportunities for FinTech Entrepreneurs. But first, we want to go a little bit into the interview, then the development of CBDCs since. Then we want to talk about opportunities for fintech entrepreneurs. You've seen a few that actually no one does yet. And then we will close out with a few more links, since your company, FNA, Financial Network Analytics, does a lot of work, a lot of publication, and also a broadcast. And there is a broadcast on central bank digital currency as of now, as of today, end of June, with 18 episodes, and there'll be more to come. Great. So, Kimmo, I remember you're an economist, and you've been an economist and or a researcher for many central banks. I've seen in your LinkedIn CV, which is also, by the way, linked down here in the show notes on our Medium blog, you worked for the Federal Reserve, for the Bank of England, and the European Central Bank. I don't think there are more bigger central banks out there. Your company also provided research that was used by U.S. Congress in the Lehman Brothers hearings. And you founded the company advising financial institutions, including but not limited to central banks, called FNA, Financial Network Analytics, where you do a lot of network analytics and also a lot of agent-based modeling. As I said, I'll link the publication from September 2022 down here. Very important for me would be the update. There has been a lot going on in central bank digital currency since I actually read a few weeks ago, even an article in mainstream media about central bank digital currency, where people can have a wallet on their cell phones. It was something the author was going totally crazy about, even though we talked about it almost a year ago. Well, we tried to be ahead of the curve. Can you give us a little update on CBDC for everybody who's not familiar with it yet. It's basically a central bank issued currency on the blockchain. So it's currency tokens, which are equal or almost equal to currency. Sorry, the field is yours, Kimmo.
Thanks, and it's great to be here again. It's a real pleasure. And thanks for the introduction. So like you said, we work a lot around financial networks and around simulation and providing technology for not only central banks today, but also to financial market infrastructures and large global banks to make the financial system safer and more efficient, which is our mission. But we do a lot of advice as well because of very specific subject matter expertise that we've been building over the years. So an update on the CBDC. So I think when we last time spoke, I think maybe the top conversations was around retail CBDC. Central bank digital currency, like you said, being something that is issued by the central bank, like banknotes, but in a digital mm-hmm. form. And I think since then, maybe if I pick three sort of main developments, the first one is that it's not necessarily on blockchain anymore. It could also be other type of cryptographic methods. It could be tokens that are on a chip card. So it's not necessarily that, and it's not actually likely that many of the schemes, the central bank digital currency schemes that will be launched will be on blockchain. So other technologies could also be used. I think the second is that the conversation has, maybe last time there wasn't so much conversation around, let's say, tokenization of bank deposits or how a central bank digital currency could be used for between banks instead of between individuals. But I think since then, that conversation has really picked up, and the Bank for International Settlements innovation hubs have set up a lot of projects and pilots to think about how that would look like in a domestic sense, but also in a cross-border sense. Different schemes that are looking into that, and then maybe the third piece would be that we've had a few CBDCs being launched, and we now have a little bit more experience looking at how did they do. We've actually seen that they haven't gotten a lot of adoption. So, for example, the Chinese CBDC or others. Even if there was a little bit of excitement in the beginning, they haven't become very widespread instruments used by the public to make payments. So I think the conversation has also then switched a little bit to the what are the particular use cases that the CBDC should serve, and what are the mechanisms that a central bank, when issuing a CBDC, would be able to encourage or incentivize adoption for those to become more successful than the schemes that we've seen so far.
Sorry, I've muted myself because I was typing like crazy here. I thought I caught your three main ideas. Let me quickly play them back to you in order to be sure that I and our audience have understood them, because basically you wrap up almost a year with three topics and you should be sure that you get them right. CBDC does not have to be in blockchain anymore. Other cryptographic means can be used, which means the start was doing a cryptocurrency kind of Bitcoin for central banks. And now they're moving away from there. Can you give us a little bit of background, a few reasons, maybe speed, maybe security?
Yeah, I think the reasons are varied. And if you think about why did the whole conversation on CBDC start, it was really the crypto showing that it would be technologically possible to run a payment system on a sort of a distributed ledger, which was, I think, very interesting. When I was working at the central banks before, let's say 20 years ago, we always thought that it would not be possible to set up a CBDC because there would be the risk of a single point of failure. What if the system breaks down and then the whole currency is compromised because of some cyber attack or other types of ways to compromise the system. But the crypto showed that, hey, actually you can run this in a distributed multi-asset international environment relatively smoothly. So I think that was an enabler for the conversation. And then the other piece was perhaps the threat that maybe if central banks do not bring up their own digital currencies, the private currencies would start to circulate, and then we would get into an environment that we had 150 years ago, where we had a lot of private currencies circulating, and it was very difficult, and it was very confusing for the consumers, and it was very difficult for merchants to put prices on goods, and there was a difficult to run monetary policy and so forth. So the central bank saw that as a risk.
Can we just try to give the people a little bit of background there? Because in the past, currency was just basically a very early on a letter that you have deposit, I don't know, a few bars of gold at the bankier of XYZ in Geneva. And then you went with this letter to another bank and they could basically pay you out a little bit of that. And that was the beginning. Then at one point, banks issued kind of their own currencies, not supervised. Basically, it was the beginning of paper money there in the Western countries. China did it way before us. And at one point, the banks managed the currency of certain countries, I do believe. In Hong Kong, the Hong Kong dollar, for example, there are still commercial banks pretty deeply involved in getting this circulated and keeping the system stable, right?
Yeah, in Hong Kong, the banknotes are still printed by the Hong Kong banks. HSBC Standard Chartered, but I think they put money to the central bank to back those issuance of those banknotes. But yeah, it's a very complex thing. So and you get into very deep philosophical questions about money very quickly. But maybe to sum it up, there was a concern that it would not be good for the society if the current system of central bank money would lose its standing. So that's one driver. In many countries, the driver has, of course, also been in the euro system or in China, the sovereign control of money. So if you think of emperors, they always wanted to put their heads on the coins. So that's been a goal of the government or an objective for a long time to have control of the monetary system. So those were the drivers for the central bank digital currencies. And then there was a technology for it available in DLT. But as we've been progressing, we found out that, hey, there are also other technologies that could be applied. Maybe even you could open up bank accounts for all individuals at the central bank. That would be one way of providing a retail payment method and cards. So there's lots of ways that the central bank could offer directly a means of payment. I think is mostly the discussion here to the public to keep the payment systems under control and not be threatened by foreign countries' actions. So I think that's the that's the bottom line there.
Also, you talked about the conversation has shifted to tokenization for bank deposits and interbank lending, which basically means that you have a utility token, which is worth, I don't know, 1 million in Citibank of New York, which is a big, by the way, a big hub, in currency trading. So you have 1 million there on an account and you can tokenize this and then work with it in a digital way.
Yeah. And I think those are quite often, I think the ideas are around distributed ledger, because in international environment, you maybe can't find a trusted single party to keep the ledger. So you want to have then distributed ledger and be sure that all the ledger movements are correct there. But yeah, so, and then the question is what does that help? Currently, movements of money are done mostly by correspondent banking networks. Those can get very complicated and costly. So I think there's been the idea that, hey, can we simplify this by having a coin circulate or other types of methods to move money cross-border, but then also domestically, does it need to, like, what kind of new features could be built into the payment system, for example, at the Bank of England, which is not considering a wholesale CBDC, but they're building, they're going to be building APIs to the RTGS system, the real-time gross settlement system used by the bank's chaps here, so that you could synchronize better, for example, movements of with the land registry or other types of registries, so you could do delivery versus payment, so you don't have to put the money into escrow when you buy an apartment or a house, but you could directly synchronize that the title moves at the same time as the money moves in the payment system, or other types of new opportunities for making the world a simpler and more efficient place. And I think one of the items that we wanted to discuss, what kind of opportunities there are for entrepreneurs. And I think these new use cases and thinking about new use cases of programmable money, for example, is definitely something that I think there'll be loads of different opportunities for companies to start to provide new ideas, new services to people.
Mm-hmm. Programmable money, you may not be able to see it in the background, but there was a experiment after the, I do believe, in Germany last century, and it was called Schwundgeld. So basically, you have a few methods how you get more the economy kickstarted. One of them is just pump in more money. That is what central banks have been doing for the past. And the other one is to increase the velocity. So that means you could theoretically, not saying any central bank is planning that, but theoretically you could get a central bank currency that is losing money when you don't spend it, that is losing value. For example, you get a 100 euro token on there, and if you don't spend it in 1 month, it will be 99. If you don't spend it in 2 months, it will be 98, and stuff like that is then possible.
Yeah, definitely. Like, those type of ideas. The other ones are purpose-bound money, so that you can use the money only for certain purposes, maybe only for a certain period of time. I think those ideas are, quite advanced in Singapore. They're thinking a lot about the purpose-bound money as being the gateway, in a way, to a central bank digital currency. Or I think there's a lot of thinking around how foreign aid or aid in catastrophe areas could be done better with money that is has better traceability and better restrictions on what it can be used for, so that maybe we can cut up corruption or some of the problems that many of these aid programs to very troubled areas have had in the past. So lots of different ideas, but also in normal circumstances, what kind of things that we can make life simpler for consumers. A lot of people always talk about Uberification of things. So, in the taxi, we used to have to make the payment, right? And the taxi gives us change and it takes time and maybe they don't have the change and so forth. And the Uber, in a way, took that away by had the payment happening in the background on the platform, dependent on the services being delivered. So no one had to, you as a consumer don't have to care about that. I think there are loads of other opportunities to tie payments to the delivery of goods so that everything's happened automatically in the background and you don't have to think about it.
That could also be the case. For example, you pay out international aid money and make sure it cannot be used for guns or alcohol or stuff like this. You could pay out social security checks bigger than they are now, and you could also only use it for rent, food and clothing, for example.
Exactly. Yeah.
Or you could even theoretically you can have an open account for children of social security receivers, and they could go then and buy everything for the next school year.
Yeah, exactly. I think sort of the imagination is the constraint here. I really think that when we talk about CBDC, that we won't see the current habits perhaps change so much immediately. So it will not replace necessarily how I pay by cards today, or debit cards, or other existing means of payments, Apple Pay or Google Pay. I don't use a lot of cash anymore, so that's already been replaced by electronic means of payment. But maybe some people do, and I think especially in Germany, people still use large amounts of cash. So maybe the CBDC replace cash, which is the intention in many countries, because the cash circulation is very expensive. If you're a island state and consisting of thousands of little islands, you have to ship the money to the right place all the time, and it's very expensive. So that's why we've seen many of the CBDC schemes kick off first at places where the provision of the cash is very expensive in the economy.
Emo, should I tell you something? I've made an experiment this year. So far, we are through half of the year. I got 500 euros cash in January 1st, and I still have some cash left because I do pay a lot with my cell phone. But yeah. I have to admit, I'm using, sorry, not sponsored by, but I use Google Pay, and not all the banks, especially the bank where I have my main account, is not necessarily working with them. So theoretically, it's possible to have an almost cashless life. For example, I don't even pay groceries. Just if you go to the bakery doing very small stuff, for example, there's a booth here where you can buy asparagus, where you can buy strawberries and stuff like that. There it is not possible to pay electronically, but almost everywhere else you can pay non-cash. Christmas markets also not possible to pay in electronic form so far, but it is getting way, way better over here. Despite all the advantages of CBDCs, you've said, for example, China, they've been very early. They launched their CBDC, but there is not a lot of adaptation yet. Can you tell us a little bit what has been learned so far about CBDCs? Because I do believe if you don't have a big utility, a big use case for the people, there is actually, for somebody who is using Apple Pay, Google Pay, Alipay, and so on and so forth, it makes sense for them. But for the people who had never used it, there's, I would say, almost no incentive to pay like that.
Yeah, exactly. So that's why I also said that I think many of the use cases will need to be some new ways of paying, new transactions that didn't take place before, new opportunities, taking advantage of the programmability or the digital nature of it, so you can tie it to different other transactions better. I think during COVID, there was an idea that that especially in countries where you have a lot of unbanked people that didn't have access to digital means of payment, that the CBDC would be something that then helps with this financial inclusion and helps people who are in their homes, reliant on good delivery services but don't have a card, need to pay cash on delivery, would then benefit from a CBDC. But what happened in between was that they built normal QR payment based payment systems very quickly there, even in most countries in Southeast Asia, you don't need cash anymore. So that sort of happened already without CBDCs. But I think CBDCs will need to, new entrepreneurs need to think of new use cases that will then over time I think become important as they grow. I think from a user perspective, I think it's very important that it's very easy.
Now we are at the important part where we actually talk about the central bank digital currency use cases. And as we've already discussed, because I'm sorry, I've been drawing out this conversation quite a little bit for over 20 minutes, because what I want to hammer home is the point that there may or may not be central bank digital currencies. They may or may not be on a blockchain, but you need to have reasons to actually use this. And that's why we're talking here today.
Indeed, yeah. So, and I think that's where a lot of fintech entrepreneurs can come in and suggest new ways of rethinking how we buy things, how different services are being delivered, and how the payment for those services are delivered. And I think we already covered a couple of other use cases around the purpose-bound money, the foreign aid, and really the imagination is the limit on these different use cases. In Australia, there was a exercise by the Digital Finance CRC to do, and together with the Reserve Bank of Australia to solicit different use cases and pilot those use cases on a CBDC. And I think those types of exercises we need much more, and call on the innovators to start thinking about how does the money of the future look like.
When you've been talking, I was writing it down, and I also thought, I just read a few days ago that billions of COVID relief money have been stranded somewhere in dark channels, have disappeared even in the US. And I thought that would be quite a good case. But we've seen the purpose bound money. We've seen financial aid or assistances, disaster relief, any purpose bound payment from government, even from companies could be used there. Are there other options you see for fintech entrepreneurs? Maybe that even nobody is doing yet.
Yeah, I think the purpose bound money very quickly then becomes something like loyalty points as well. So you get into that whole world of air miles, different incentive programs that could be running in a way on the same system. But then perhaps it's not a central bank digital currency anymore, and it's more using the sort of same technology for different types of non-central bank claims or schemes. But I think in the central bank case, directing some of these payments by the government would be an easy way to increase adoption. The problem with the current schemes is if they've even incentivized you to sign up to the CBDC, maybe saying that, hey, you get $10 or something if you decided to create an account, and then you use that $10 and then you forget about it. so you really need to have some payments, like the way with your, why do you use cards on your bank account? It's because you get your salary or other payments into your bank account, and you always get replenished, and you use the same instrument to use the funds that you get there. You know, if the CBDC was something that you always have to load, then it becomes like cash, and we're getting away from cash because it's inconvenient to go into the ATM to withdraw it, right? So then it needs to be really simple for the users to be able to use it without having to have these complicated mechanisms to top up your wallets, and even then it doesn't necessarily, people are very habit driven, so it doesn't necessarily change your habits how you make payments today. So therefore, I think the main adoption route is through new use cases and understanding, learning back from when you're launching it, where do you get adoption and why did adoption takes place, and then enforcing those routes into adoption. So it's also a data analytics exercise simulating, modeling, why would a consumer choose one of these payment instruments at the point of sale? Why would he or she choose a central bank digital currency over cards? And I think a lot of these things, so we started the conversation around network analytics and simulation. So I believe a lot of the adoption will be helped by doing analysis of network analysis, understanding who is paying where, what kind of clusters do we find. Facebook started with one university, a very tight cluster, and then expanded to another university, then between those universities. So how do we find those adoption paths? So network analysis of the actual payment networks in the real economy, and then being able to simulate ground up, why would a consumer choose a certain payment. I think those are the sort of analytical ways to think about how do we create a success story out of a CBDC and it gets adoption from consumers.
When you've been talking, I instantly had in mind there's an international coffee chain with a green logo that already provides you with the ability to scan to pay with their app, with the points. And I do believe you can then load CBDC money or any money, basically. You would not need CBDC on there. You get 5-10% more than what you originally paid in, and they already have the cash deposit there. I also can imagine this doing with some retailers. For example, there's one here in Germany with a red logo that is already going away from the loyalty programs that you have here in Germany and starting to do everything in their own app. And that would be also an ecosystem in which this could work, but what I've not seen yet is incentives to have something outside of a one economy system. I do believe a lot of companies tried with some kind of token, their own digital currencies, and I have not seen a lot of adoption. I think even an international retailer from Seattle tried with their own currency, points, whatever, and even that did not work. Do you also have some ideas in mind, some potential business ideas, what people could do but are not doing yet?
So we work mostly in the interbank space together with the banks. So most of my ideas are related to there, and also something that we work together on with our clients. And I think, but if I phrase it a little bit differently, what are the big questions that are there today? Sort of like problems that need solving. On the CBDC, it's adoption. How does a CBDC system get used by the users? What are the use cases? And those we discussed already. I think the two other big problems that we today have is the other is around liquidity. In a way, it's the working capital within the economy. You talked about the velocity of money. So the working capital can go less if the velocity gets higher. So I think we need to get the velocity higher because we are now, again, first time since 20 years, and most people's whole working careers, we are in an environment with positive interest rates. And that changes a lot of things. And I don't think we've sort of figured out all the things that it changes, but those things are coming to us very quickly. And one of them is that we don't have free money anymore. Money costs now. We see the apartment prices going down in many places, banks getting more and corporates getting more conscious about the liquidity buffers that they have. So liquidity optimization across the whole chain, across corporates, across banks, across different economies, I think is going to be more important and will provide a lot of opportunities for a lot of entrepreneurs. I think the other one is...
When you've been talking about moving money along the chain, what instantly came to mind is supply chains?
Yes, supply chains, that's the other piece. I see it immediately after COVID hit and I started to look at what is being written in the news. I said that supply chains are going to be the next big thing. There's going to be similar legislation after COVID like we had after the financial crisis of 2008-09 to be able to get more visibility into the supply chains and to be able to analyze and model and help supply chain get less disrupted. They're still disrupted, the supply chains. Here in the UK, the supermarkets are still empty because of supply chain problems. And the third piece is financial crime. With all these new payment methods, money being able to, when you can move money easier and faster, it means that criminals can also launder money easier and faster. And when everything is digital, and people are unused to digital new methods. It means that they become easy targets for fraudsters to steal money from them. And I think that is becoming a visible large problem in countries that were first in to launch these let's say, faster payment systems and instant payment systems for retail consumers. So they're becoming, fraud is becoming a large problem in those. So better methods to detect fraud, stop fraud, better ways of do that collectively on the network level and not only on an individual bank level. I think those are important and areas where there's a lot of opportunities to solve real problems.
Yeah, I also do believe when you've been talking about fraud, what also came to mind is anti-money laundering. Basically, if you do have a bucket full of cash from some kind of drug deal, you either have to use the cash all by yourself, but at one point, if you're successful enough, just depositing it in one of the rooms in your apartment is not enough. Also, if you're really criminal, you should be afraid of the police and raiding your apartment. So you have to get it into some kind of legal business. And that is the money laundry that you could also theoretically fight with, that as well as terrorism financing. I would also say there are some opportunities here, but only from people who really understand the business, because I do believe that is very difficult to do this properly.
Yeah, so and especially in the CBDC or faster payment systems where you can move money quickly around between people, between corporations, what happens is that there's a lot of account fraud taking place, or like fraudulently sourced payments. So, for example, like I would fraud you some money, move onto my account, or actually not my account, but an account that I control. But then, because in the faster payment system, I can move it 100 times during the day across different accounts, so I can very quickly, in a way, mask the where the money then goes out of the system into cash or crypto, and but through this circulation of the money across these several mule accounts, I can lose everyone who is not algorithmically tracking it to avoid being caught. So it creates new opportunities, all these faster payment systems for criminals that are quite often very quick to grasp on the opportunities. Same like fintech innovators should be in creating new use cases for the new platforms and technologies that become available.
Sorry, I just had to smile here. We talk about fintech opportunities, and what my guest says is, yeah, usually the scammers are the first and the fastest one to adopt here.
The new technologies, yes.
But I do understand it, right? So we have a lot of areas differently. First, you can do purpose-bound money. You can do better tracking. And you could also... or have to change the behavior at the point of sale, the point of usage of the money. And that it'll be where entrepreneurs can really come up with great ideas. Also, all the criminal investigation area on anti-money laundry, terrorism financing, defrauding of aid programs, scamming, and so on and so forth. That is also an area where fintech entrepreneurs can do a lot of business. Have you already seen somebody doing that?
Yeah, definitely. I think I was just 2 weeks ago in Money 2020. So it's pretty much, it's how many, 7,000 people, 8,000 people, all around payments or around fintech. So those type of things we didn't have 10 years ago. I don't know why. Maybe it was just that it was a sleepy business, the payments business, but now pretty much fintech has become to mean mostly that it's about payments. It's around making faster, cheaper payments. Every economic activity that we have is associated with a payment. So it's a huge infrastructure area, the same way like anything that we purchase has some energy embedded into it. So energy is a big business, but so is the payments. Everything that we buy has also some kind of a payment embedded to it, and the payment costs money. So therefore, you know, like these are huge... huge industries with a lot of different opportunities and parts that you can play in. A lot of innovation can take place.
what also came to mind when you've been talking about that, because since our last conversation, I was talking to a lot of companies working in or around the secondhand market, especially for fashion. And I could see some large retailers, when you pay money, they also give you some money back when you hand it in for secondhand. That would be also something you could do there, for which you don't necessarily need central bank digital currency, but that is also something that could be easier with CBDCs.
Yeah, exactly. To sort of like the upcycling and the circular economy. So how can money help in the circular economy and make it more smoother?
Interesting thoughts here. We don't have hammered out fintech business cases as of now yet, but I'm very sure at latest in the next few interviews, we will have something to tell you. And I do believe you will be back sooner than a year.
Hope so.
It would be a pleasure to have you back. For now, it was a pleasure to have you. Thank you very much for your time, Kimo. We were running way longer than the usual interviews. Maybe we need to split this in two, but nonetheless, it was a pleasure talking to you. Thank you very much.
Likewise, son.
That's all, folks. Find more news, streams, events, and interviews at www.startuprad.io. Remember, sharing is caring.